Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Sue C. from York.
Hi guys, Suzanne Alcoholic. I'm extremely nervous, so I apologize if I stutter. Alrighty. Thank you for the invitation. I greatly appreciate it. I am from York, and I have a sobriety date of October 17th of last year. Slightly in between home groups right now. I have a sponsor, and I've had the privilege of sponsoring women in this program. I'm told to tell you what it was like, what happened, and what it's like today. I'm originally from Jersey. Family of six, kind of a mixed family. Three brothers and two sisters. Stepmom, whole bunch of kids. The youngest of six. So I apologize if I talk fast. When you have a family of six, you kind of got to talk fast so you really don't get, like, heard. To my knowledge, I'm the only known alcoholic in my family, so I can't exactly blame it on the genetics or it runs in a family or anything like that. When I was younger, I was one of those kids that I tried to do things for attention, but like I didn't realize why I was doing them. I got caught for shoplifting a pack of gum at like 5 years old. I would sneak out of the house with my brothers and follow them. We had this fort in the back of the yard. And I wanted to be known. I wanted to be a part of my family, you know. And you should always feel like a part of your family. When you're not an alcoholic, you don't have that constant struggle of you have to fight to fit in. And I didn't realize that that's what I was doing at such a young age, middle school, high school, that kind of deal. Like I said, I have a very big family. We flew up here. I'm, like, still, like, reeling from being late. I apologize. I didn't really understand, like, a lot of my behaviors. Like, they say that you exhibit behaviors before you even pick up your first drink, and that is absolutely something that I've experienced in my life. I was always trying to be the best at everything that I did. I played soccer in high school. I played all 4 years. And if I wasn't better than you, I had to make you believe I was better than you, whether it's, you know, telling you how much you suck at what you're doing, or you need to do it this way, or, and I had to be the best, because I was so insecure with anything that had to do with me. Somebody was always better than me, somebody was always, had better clothes, or, you know, had more money, or a better family, or stuff like that. So anything that I did, I had to make a very big deal out of. Like, look what I'm doing. You know, pay attention to me. And I realized that a lot of that came out, like, when I played sports. And I went to a private school for high school. It was a very, very small private school. It was a graduating class of 19. So it's kind of hard to not be noticed. Real, real small. So if you wore the wrong sneakers or you did something stupid, everybody would know, you know. So I had to always feel like I was being watched, you know. And always had to be on top of my game, you know. And always had to make sure that you guys thought that I was okay. I made sure that you guys thought that I was cool, and I was with the right crowd, and I was, you know, had the right shoes and listened to the right music and all that kind of stuff, because I was so scared of what you guys thought of me, you know. I needed to be number one. And I did that, I even did that, like, with my family. And it wasn't always in the best way either. Like, I would get in trouble, but I'd get in, like a lot of trouble. Like, I wouldn't just do something stupid, like lie to my parents. I would wait till I flew to Florida and throw a huge party and have somebody pretty much slice open my parents' pool. You know, like, big things. Like, you know, they needed to know that something was going on. So whether it was good attention or bad attention, at least I was getting attention. And that absolutely showed up. My senior year in high school was when I had my first consequences from alcohol. I was privileged enough to go to Europe for a senior class trip. And while out there, me and my friends thought it would be really cool. I actually turned 17 out in London. So I thought it would be really cool that we all go out and drink, because there's no drinking age out in Europe. So we're all out drinking and having a good time, and one of my friends accidentally cut their hand on a broken glass somehow. And I didn't think anything of it. You know, we're in Europe, we're having a blast, great time, all my friends. And, you know, we fly back to the States, and the first Monday back at school, I get a, you know, Miss Corbin, you need to report to the principal's office. Okay, you know, not a problem. And apparently the incident with the girl cutting her hand, she went and told my principal, and I got a week of in-school suspension for being belligerently drunk, apparently. And I apparently was the one that sliced this girl's hand on a glass. I don't know. I'm just, you know, that's just what they told me. So I'm 17, senior year, and I'm sitting in a grade school classroom for, I guess what you guys would call it, senior week. Like, everybody really doesn't come to school. They pretty much do whatever they want. So I'm sitting there, and I have, like, these third graders coming up to me asking me if I want to color and, you know, like, why are you sitting in here? And what did you do? And I'm like, nothing. I got in trouble. You know, and it wasn't even like, oh, I got in trouble, I shouldn't have done it. It was like, oh, I got caught. You know, maybe next time I'll do it better. You know, maybe next time I won't, you know, I'll drink with different friends so they don't rat on me. You know, it had nothing to do with my own actions. You know, I was already not taking responsibility for my own actions. That summer, I knew that I was going to be leaving my parents' house. I knew that I was moving out to Pennsylvania to go to college. So I really didn't stress the summer too much. I hung out with my friends. I was supposed to be in by a certain time. And, you know, I really pretty much didn't listen to you know, the request of please be home by, you know, midnight. And I was leaving. What are we going to do? Not let me go to college? You know, like, I'm getting out of your hair. I'm doing you guys a favor by I'm leaving in 2.5 months. Just let me do what I want to do. And the last night before we were supposed to come out to, we were going to move me out to York, PA, I didn't come home. Showed up probably about 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning. All they asked me to do was their last request was please just be home at a decent time so we can leave. Well, I was like, I'm leaving in the morning. I want to spend the last night with my friends. I'm going to go out and do what I want to do. You know, what are you guys going to do? Not take me to college? They didn't take me to college. I came home about 5:30 in the morning. My parents were sitting on the porch, and I got out of the car, and they said, what are you doing? I said, I got to go pack. I'm leaving in a couple hours. They're like, no, you're not. I was like, all right, we'll see. So I went upstairs, packed my stuff, took a nap. Woke up at like 1:30, 2 o'clock in the afternoon, and they went out to lunch. And I was like, wow, like, they really weren't kidding. So I called up some friends of mine. I'm like, all right, we're going to have a road trip. And they packed me up, and I, you know, drove out to college, and I called my parents when I got there, and they said, I said, I just want to let you know that I made it here, okay? They said, good, you're out of our hair. Click, and hung up the phone. I was like, I thought that was the best feeling in the world. I was like, I'm free. I have nobody breathing down my neck, nobody telling me when to come home and what, you know, anything like that. And, started out college, I thought it was going to be this big, exciting venture, and I was absolutely petrified the minute I stepped on campus. There was all these people that didn't know who I was, all these people I needed to impress. You know, I was living with a roommate, you know, in the dorms that I felt like I was being watched 24 hours a day. Like, I couldn't even breathe without being, you know, spied on, or, you know, whatever the case might be. I always had to constantly be on my toes. I always had to watch what I was saying, or watch who I was talking to, or, you know, the music I was listening to, or, because if my roommate saw something that she didn't like, she might go tell everybody else. And I'm, you know, I had that I needed to please people feeling from the minute I stepped foot on that campus. I didn't realize how stressful it was going to be. You know, I thought it was just going to be, you know, college, you know, is supposed to be the greatest experience of your life, but I don't think I've ever had to work so hard, you know, to fit in with people in my entire life. And it got really, really stressful. And started making some friends on campus, and started going to, like, you know, the frat parties and, you know, the fraternity row, and started feeling comfortable drinking with a couple of these people. And it didn't take me long before I didn't give a crap what you guys thought about me. Those fraternity parties were such a sigh of relief. You know, I could go, and it didn't matter what group of people were there or what I was wearing or who I was talking to. The minute I got in, and the minute they set that glass in my hand, I could finally breathe. And that's pretty much how I spent my college career, you know, sitting in sitting in cold, dirty fraternity houses and learning how to play beer pong and all that good jazz. And it absolutely caught up with me because I was called down to the dean's office, and I was pretty much nicely told that I was wasting their time and I was wasting my money. Apparently alcoholism isn't a class that you learn in college. I couldn't get credit for all the drinking that I did. I drank probably 8 out of 7 days a week, and they told me that I was wasting their time, and they asked me to please leave. So I neglected to tell that to my folks, so I cashed in, you know, all the rest of the money for my the term that I never finished, and I got an apartment. And I figured it was great. You know, I don't have to go to class. I don't have to be up at 8 o'clock in the morning anymore. You know, I can sleep till whatever time of day, and I don't have to worry about it. And that was great. That was really awesome for about a week and a half until all that money from that college term that I cashed in was gone, and I needed to grow up and get a job. So I did. You know, I'm 20, 21 years old. I got a job at a pizza shop, and paid every day, you know, delivered. You know, I always managed to have money on me somehow. You know, so I never really thought too much of it. You know, I kept the apartment and, you know, was able to keep a job and everything. But no matter, it got to the point where no matter how much, you know, partying I was doing or anything like that, I still had that real, I didn't fit my own skin feeling. No matter how much I drank or what party I went to or, you know, who I was dating or how much money I had, like, I just, nothing made me feel okay, you know, and it was getting to the point where I would sit at my house and I wasn't even okay with being me. Nobody was around. Nobody was watching me. Nobody was, you know, holding a magnoscope, a magnifying glass up to me, you know, and scrutinizing my every move, but I was, you know, and I couldn't even be okay just being me. So I started sitting at home and started drinking by myself at home, you know, and just so I could breathe with nobody around, you know, and little by little, you know, I all those friends that I thought I had in college, you know, started growing up. Graduating, getting jobs, you know, the things that you're supposed to do, you know, when you're in college, not working at a pizza shop and, you know, drinking all day long. So, I ended up losing that apartment, and I was living with a family that owned the restaurant that I was working at. And they said, we know you got some stuff going on, and if you need a place to stay, you can come live with us. Well, they had a couple kids of their own, and they said the only thing that they asked me to do is not drink and get messed up in their house. I didn't have to pay rent. You know, I could live in the basement. And and it sounded like a really sweet deal. I didn't have to worry about anything until I couldn't not drink, you know, in their house. Or I thought I was, like, real slick. I would drink and then come home. But I would, it'd be like 3 o'clock in the morning, and I'd be like yelling and waking up all the kids who were at school in the morning, passing out on their bathroom floor. I remember one time I wasn't coherent, but I heard people, like I could hear what was going on around me. And the gentleman whose house it is, he was standing in the bathroom over me and was yelling up at his wife and said, she's passed out on the bathroom floor again. What are we going to do? And I heard her say, we're just going to leave her there. And they did. They left me on the bathroom floor. And I woke up a couple hours later and called in the basement. And not long after that, I was asked to leave. They said that their children didn't need to see that. That I could live my life any way that I wanted to, but I wasn't going to do it under their roof. So I said, okay, fine. And I saved up a little bit of money and got a little studio apartment. And everything was fine and dandy until drinking wasn't good enough for me anymore. I started getting fights, you know, heated arguments, I guess you would say, with people. I just thought I was having a conversation, but apparently it was a little bit, you know, when you're yelling and screaming and you're the one that ends up locked up in jail and they're, you know, not, you're probably the one to blame. I started getting into arguments and started getting into trouble with the police and things of that nature. And I didn't understand why. You know, I didn't understand what was going on that I was getting in trouble, you know. I can go to a bar on any given night and there'd be hundreds of people drinking at a club or you know, the same people sitting at the same bar stool, you know, and how come their lives aren't falling apart? You know, how come they can successfully drink, you know, and they can go home and go to work the next day, you know, and I go home and I'm miserable and I'm gonna blow my brains out. And so, you know, drinking stopped doing it for me, you know, and I started finding some other things that went right along with it that absolutely took me out of me one more time. And it was almost like that feeling of that first drink all over again, you know, that this is what I've been missing, you know, this is what's going to make me okay with me, you know. And I wasn't raised like that. I was raised with morals and values, and I thought I was, you know. When I first moved out here and I saw, New York's a very big recovery town, so when I would, before I actually realized what I was doing with my life and realized that I was an alcoholic, I would watch people, you know, and I had a couple friends that were in recovery, and, you know, they'd end up going back out and call me and say, you know, can you take me to this rehab or can you take me to this recovery house? I would always look at them and look at them and be like, what are you doing, you know? Why can't you just get it together? Why don't you just stop drinking or, you know, stop sticking needles in your arm? Like, I'm never going to be like you, you know. I'm not going to be that bad. I'm not going to be the one sleeping in a shed or trying to break into somebody's house or, you know, and I'm so judgmental. I was always better than you, yet I was worse than you at the exact same moment, you know. And little by little, you know, the things that I saw that these people were doing, you know, started coming true in my life. You know, I was stealing from my boss or lying to this person and lying to that person, and, you know, at some given point I didn't realize I was homeless. I just thought I was spending like the night at my friend's house over and over and over and over again. Apparently that constitutes being homeless. I don't know. I got in this relationship before I realized that I had a problem. Everybody around me knew what was going on with me except for me, and I wish that they filled me in because I might have been a little bit better off. But I got in this relationship, and that immediately fixed me. You know, I finally had somebody that needed me. I finally had somebody that depended on me. I finally had somebody that gave me everything that I couldn't give me. You know, the security and the self-esteem and the desire to be needed. You know, that slowed me down a little bit. You know, it slowed down my drinking. You know, I laid off, you know, everything else for a little while. And, you know, I focused, I got a job, and we had a nice apartment. And, you know, we were a happy little family. And until you know, one day they pissed me off, and I snapped. And I never, in my family, I was never going to be the, you know, my family was kind of, I love my folks to death, I really do. But my mom was, she loved me the best way that she knew how. But I guess at that point it was, you know, when she would, you know, smack me across the face and tell me she loves me. Or, you know, lock me in the basement because, you know, just, it's how she thought she, you know, was loving me. That kind of situation. And I swore up and down that I was never going to be like that. You know, I was never going to be that parental figure. I was never going to use, you know, violence or anything of that nature to discipline or anything. And one day I caught myself beating the crap out of the girl that I was with at the time. And I stopped and I knew that something was wrong. And I walked out of the apartment and I went to the bar and I came home about 4.5 days later to find that it was empty. Everything that was fixing me at the time, once again, wasn't working. You know, the relationship wasn't working. You know, the money wasn't working. Alcohol wasn't working anymore. And, you know, I was becoming that angry, violent person because I was so miserable. You know, I could look at somebody and they would just be happy and they would be genuinely comfortable with themselves. And I was so frustrated because I could not understand why I can't get that feeling. You know, why I can't just breathe. You know, I constantly felt like somebody was choking me all the time, you know, and I never realized that it was me. You know, I never realized that I was the one, you know, that was choking all, you know, choking the life out of myself. Mm-hmm. And fast forward a little bit, I ended up in my first rehab. 3 years ago in December. And I went, and it's funny, I hear the stories, like when I go in there and I hear all the war stories, and I'm sitting there thinking, I'm still not that bad. You know, like, you're sleeping with Joe Schmo, and you're, you know, doing this, and you're doing that, like, sleeping in the back of a car. I'm not that bad. I still got friends that will pick up the phone for me, you know, and I got some family members that might still send me a little bit of money here and there, you know, and I can get a job, and I can clean up real good, so I'm really not that bad. So I walked out of that rehab, and that was probably the best thing that ever happened to me, because a week and a half later, I was sticking needles in my arm, and I finally hit so many of my nevers that I absolutely wanted to blow my brains out. I never thought that I could feel so low, you know, and do all the things that I looked at you and said that I'm not going to do that. You know, I'm going to be okay because I'm not that bad yet. And it absolutely didn't take long for me to get that bad, you know, and I thought that, you know, I would try one more time to clean up, you know, because I don't want to go through life living this, like, with this monkey on my back, you know, feeling like I couldn't stand up, and I couldn't stand up tall and look anybody in the eye, and I just couldn't shake that feeling of I was having the life choked out of me every time. And, you know, no amount of alcohol at this point or no amount of anything else, you know, was making it okay for me to breathe. So I picked up the phone and I called that family that asked me to leave. And I said, look, you know, I need some help. I said, I don't know what to do. I said, but my life is falling apart. And I can't go. I can't do it anymore. And they drove me up to my second rehab in a year. And I was a little bit more willing to listen to somebody this time. You know, I was a little bit more open-minded. Because, you know, I saw people in life that were genuinely happy. You know, and not everybody was this miserable, you know, this miserable shell of a human being. And I wanted that. You know, I envied that. Because I didn't know how to function, you know, in life. And so I listened to the counselors and I listened to these people talk, and, you know, people would come up and share their experience, strength and hope and what happened to them, you know, and it sparked my interest a little bit. You know, because these people, I was always one of those people that you're never going to understand. You know, if you had my life, you know, just leave me alone. You know, my life has been so miserable and this, that, and the other thing. Well, you know what, I would listen to people. And these people genuinely understood how I felt. You know, like, I would listen to people, and it was as if, you know, somebody read a book about my life and got up and told it to me. And I've never experienced that before. You know, I've never had somebody, you know, have the same pain in their eyes, you know, or, you know, that I felt. You know, and I could look at somebody and I wasn't being judged by them, you know. So, you know, little by little I started listening, you know, and I started taking a little bit of advice, you know, and it wasn't me against the world anymore. You know, and I got out of that treatment facility. I actually didn't walk out this time. And I stopped. I maintained a little bit of time clean. Got another job. You know, started getting some things back in my life. But something still didn't fit. Something still felt off. You know, and I could not for the life of me figure out what it was. You know, because I still wanted the girlfriend, I still wanted the money, and I still wanted the job. I just didn't want to drink so much anymore. You know, I just didn't want to wake up every day, you know, and be hungover. You know, if I could just go through life and just hold on, you know, just hang in there, you know, that everything would be okay. And it still wasn't. You know, you take alcohol and everything else away from me, and I'm even more miserable, you know, than if I was drinking. Because that was my solution. That was my answer. You know, that was my salvation. You know, and if you take that away from me, I'm left with just me. You know, and me thinking about me is horrendous. You know, I would, oh my goodness, because I didn't know, you know, I didn't know what the answer was yet. I wasn't willing to open my eyes and completely let go of everything that I thought that I knew. you know, because everything that I thought that I knew, you know, ends me up sleeping with a mechanic in the back of a garage. You know, everything that I thought I knew, you know, ends up with you know, me and my ex getting in a fight and me having my face busted open, you know, because I think I'm all big and bad. You know, that's how I thought, you know, living my life was going to be. You know, that's my best thinking. Ended me up in jails, ended me up in rehab, you know, ended me up in the front seat of an AA meeting, you know. And I didn't understand how, you know, I would hear these things, you know, like let go and let God. And, you know, I would hear, you know, the 12 steps and I would, yeah, I'm absolutely an alcoholic, my life is unimaginable, blah, blah, blah. So what do you want me to do about it? How are you guys going to fix me? You know, like I'm going to come here and I'm going to listen to you guys and you guys are going to fix me. Because you all seem okay. You know, you guys seem like, you know, you have your life, you know, pretty much put together. And your smiles don't seem so fake. You know, and when you look at me and you say, how are you? You just don't be like, hey, how you doing? And walk on by. You know, you actually want to take a minute and care. And I wanted that so bad. You know, I wanted somebody to care so bad because I couldn't even care about myself. So, it's funny, after I came out of rehab, I didn't like start going straight to meetings. You know, I just figured I would slow down drinking. I would just not drink and everything else would fall into place. And it's really weird how God works. You know, they always say that God's working in your life long before you give him permission for it. And, I was working at this pizza shop in York and I would every day, almost like clockwork, right around 1:15. I had this group of people that would walk in, and they were, you know, the shiny eyes and the happy people, and they were just, you know, no matter what, it was like snowing out, and they were walking, and they didn't have a car, and they're like, they're soaking wet because they're like walking in the snow, and they're like, hey, how you doing? Da-da-da-da-da. Like, overly happy, like completely joyous and free, and I'm like, you make me sick, you know. So, you know, these people are coming in, and little by little, I'm listening to them talk, and. I had somebody ask me one day, you know, what are you doing later on? And I was like, working, probably going out, whatever, I don't know why, what's up? And they said, you know, I'm going to go to a meeting and I want you to go with me. And I was like, say what? Like, how do you know what's going on with me? You know, like, it's not like I would sit there and, it's like the kind of relationship you have, like the guy with Starbucks, you say hi and, you know, that's pretty much it. But you see him every single day. Well, I would see these people every day and just by the way that I guess I acted or the attitude that I put off, they just sensed it, you know, like, we know our own kind, we seek us out, you know, and he instantly knew, like, that, you know, I was one of him, you know, because it doesn't, I thought that I was really good at acting and putting on that whole, like, I'm doing really good, you know, blah, 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 life's great, but I'm just, like, broken and completely miserable inside. Well, he saw right through that, you know, and took the time to see me for what I really was, which was broken and scared and miserable, So I started going, you know, to these meetings, and things got different real quick. You know, it wasn't like I made a bunch of money. It wasn't like I had, you know, I was walking around with, you know, some super chick on my arm. You know, I didn't have the greatest car or the biggest apartment, but something inside of me was different. You know, I wasn't willing to let go of everything, you know, but there was absolutely certain aspects of my life that I was willing to let go of, you know, and I would go home and I would just sleep. I could put my head down at night and I could sleep, you know, and it wasn't this constant rat race in my head of, well, this person, you know, 4 days ago said this about you and now today and then yesterday and what are you going to do tomorrow and when this person sees you, like, no, like it calmed down, you know, and I was just such a sigh of relief, you know, that I could finally put my head down, you know, and sleep, you know. So I kind of figured that there was something to this whole 12 steps thing, you know, there was something to this, you know, higher power thing, and it wasn't me, you know. My higher power was no longer in a bottle, and it was no longer in a relationship or in my wallet, you know. It was something, it was so much bigger than me, you know. And unfortunately, I got real complacent, real easy. You know, like, if you don't let go of everything, you're still going to hold on to something, you know, and that something's going to drag you right down. You know, and I absolutely experienced that. You know, there was relationships in my life that I still felt the need to control, you know, and people that I felt, you know, I thought, once again, that I knew best for me. You know, I needed to be in this group of people or with this, you know, in this relationship. And real quick, I got real miserable, you know, and I did exactly what I knew when that voice in my head is screaming at me so loud, you know, that once again, you're a failure, you're a screw up. You know, why can't you get this? You know, and I went right back out to doing what I was doing. And it went by a lot faster. You know, it didn't take me months, you know, to hit a rock bottom this time. But I was grateful, you know, through going to these meetings and seeing these people. You know, I made a couple friends that I didn't really realize were friends yet. You know what I mean? Like, you didn't realize that when you pick up the phone, they would come over. And I had this one incident that it still boggles my mind. I lived in a little studio apartment on the main street in the city, and there's two doors that are to get upstairs to my apartment, and the first one locks automatically, and then my apartment door I constantly kept locked. And I was calling somebody because somebody owed me money, or, you know, I needed to get what I needed to get because my head was screaming at me, and somebody owed me money. So I made a couple phone calls, and one of those phone calls was to a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And they said, you know, what's going on? I said, I'm looking for somebody. I said, are they with you? You know, I need to talk to them. And they weren't. And they said, they asked me, they're like, what's going on? You sound like something's wrong. And I said, no, I'm good. I'm standing over, you know, I'm at my apartment, and I'm slicing the hell out of my skin. And I was absolutely on the phone trying to kill myself because I couldn't take it anymore. And they're like, okay, I'll be right over. And I'm like, no. Like, I'm good. You know what I mean? And I don't understand, because I was standing in my bathroom over my sink, you know, blood gushing out of my wrist. And I turn around, and there's somebody standing in my living room. Walked right through two locked doors. Like, I still don't understand how that happened. And if it wasn't for God putting that person in my apartment at that exact moment, I probably wouldn't be here right now. Because I was so done. You know, I tried AA, and I tried rehab, and I tried this, and I tried that, and nothing else shut up the voices in my head. You know, so this was all that I knew. You know, if I could just make it stop, I'd be okay. You know, my family really didn't care at this point, and the friends that I thought were going to be there, you know, I wouldn't be missed. You know, I'm just a drain on society anyway. So, you know, if I'm just not around, it'll be that much better for everybody else. And I was wrong. You know, and I turn around and this person's standing there, and I looked at him and I said, what the hell are you doing here? I don't want you here. And they said, exactly. You know, that's pretty much why I'm here. You know, and they stayed until I calmed down. You know, and a couple of days later, I was in the psych unit of York Hospital. One of those places I thought that I was never going to be, because I'm so much better than everybody, you know. But I fit right in. I felt right at home, you know, when I was there. I don't even fit that well in my own family, let alone, like, strangers that I don't even know. But, you know, and I had my first 12-step call that day, you know, when I was in there. Two sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous showed up for me. I didn't ask them to. You know, they were just doing what God led them to do. You know, they were just in the right place at the right time. You know, and they did the next right thing that God put in front of them. You know, so, you know, started talking to me about this hole I have in my soul. I was like, no, I don't. Like, you know, I didn't understand it. You know, that constant search for something, you know, to make me finally feel okay with me. You know, and I, for a brief time, I found it in alcohol. For a brief time, I found it in girls. For a brief time, I found it in a needle. You know, but that was only for a brief time. You know, everything else just, it passed. It fled. You know, it failed me. You know, because it was something that I, it was something worldly. You know, it was money or property or prestige. You know, that's what I was searching for. That made me feel okay with me. You know, but it wasn't that. It was this. It's this hole in my soul that something greater than me is you know, is going to be able to make me finally feel okay with me. You know, and that was the first time that was introduced to me. You know, that somebody explained it, you know, like that to me, where I could actually understand it. Like, yeah, I absolutely feel like I have an emptiness in my life. You know, I said, but now that you're going to tell me this, I need you to show me how to fix it. You know, I need you to show me what to do to finally make me okay in my own skin. And people, and they just told me, do what I do. You know, like, I couldn't understand why I was so attracted to these people. Because they annoyed the hell out of me. Like, Why would you follow somebody around and want to be like somebody that absolutely annoys the crap out of you? But they were happy, you know? And I'm just like, you annoy me, but how do I be like you, you know? And I couldn't understand, but I find myself going to these meetings and going out to get coffee. Yeah, I don't even drink coffee, but everybody's going out after the meeting. Yes, okay, I want to be with somebody. I don't want to go home. You know, let me be around people that can look at me and understand, you know, that I don't feel like I have to explain myself or be something that I'm not. You know, I can just absolutely just be me, you know? And little by little, like, things got better again, you know? But I was a little leery because I got better before, you know, and then it all crashed, you know? But people would ask me, well, what are you going to do different this time? You know, and I really wouldn't have an answer. I wouldn't know, you know. People are like, well, what'd you do last time? What'd you go wrong? I don't know, you know. And then I thought about it, and it was when I started living my own life again. You know, when I stopped asking for direction, and I stopped, you know, seeking wise counsel, you know. And when I had a great idea, it obviously wasn't a great idea because, I came up with it. And, you know, so I would do things that I never did before, like pray, you know. And granted, like, I'd be sitting in York County Prison being like, God, get me out of here, you know. Or, you know, like, yeah, just, you know, not like genuine prayers. Like, I'm not, you know, it wasn't like I had to get on my knees and, you know, the Hail Mary and blah, blah, blah. Like, I could actually just get on my knees and talk to my higher power like he's sitting right next to me. You know, like, I'm sitting at home in a conversation with an old friend, you know, that wants nothing but the best for me. And I didn't understand that, you know, like, I never understood that maybe my views of higher power were a little bit misconstrued, you know, because I have a very, very twisted perception of things, you know, and maybe the way that I see things is wrong, you know, maybe I don't have to be right all the time, you know. And when people started explaining, you know, asking questions like, what do you want your higher power to be, you know, and stuff like that, it made me think, like, I want somebody or something there that's going to just want my best interest at heart, you know, and do for me what I can't do for myself, you know, and be there when I feel like I'm all alone, you know. And so I would start praying, and I would start, you know, when I would go to a meeting, and I would look at the girl in the corner that looked like me not that long ago, you know, with that shallow look in her face, and that, I am so scared, please don't come talk to me, but please don't walk away from me, you know, that look, you know. And I never thought that I was going to be the one that could help people, you know, like, what do I have to offer, you know? I'm just a dope fiend, being an alcoholic who, my best idea is try to kill myself. What good am I going to do, you know, for somebody that's hurting? You know, how am I going to be able to help somebody else? You know, but I would do it anyway, because that's what my sponsor told me to do. You know, go talk to him. You don't know. You know, so, and I would. And little by little, like, it's not that I didn't feel so bad about my life. It was almost like my perception changed to, I could see where the situations in my life could benefit somebody else. You know, they say that your past is going to be your greatest asset. And I never understood that, you know, because if you had my life, you know. But little by little, there was things in my life that just, I would do all over again. I would go through the pain, and I would go through, you know, the heartache and all this stuff, you know, and all that. If I knew that 4 years, 5 months, 8 days, whatever the case may be down the road, somebody's going to look at me and say, you know what, it feels so good to have somebody understand, you know. And just, it's just little things, you know, like, I have a life beyond my wildest dreams today, you know. And I never thought I thought that was so cliche, you know, like, well, I want a Porsche, and I want $1 million, and I want a huge house, and I want to be real popular. And I thought that all that stuff mattered, you know. But there's things in my life today that I never even knew that I wanted. Like, when I was younger, me and my mom didn't get along too well. She's my stepmom. And, of course, you know, because I would always get in trouble and all that jazz. She would always come at me and say, my kids would never do the things that you do to me. You know, my kids would never put me through. What's wrong with you? You know, why can't you just be like your brother or like your sister? Da-da-da-da. And we never really got along. And then, you know, through high school when she found out that, she found out about my lifestyle, she's like, you know, I didn't raise you like this. And just, I always was a constant disappointment to her, you know, and she never really wanted me around. A couple months back, I found out that my mom has cancer. And I've been sober, you know, since I found this out. And, like, my family calls me today and gives me updates on my mom. And she had to get some surgery thing done, and she wanted me to come see her. My mom never wanted me around. My sisters never wanted me around. You know, but my phone rings today, and it's my family on the other end asking me when I'm going to come home. You know, asking me, you know, Mom just wants you to know what's going on. And she was always the kind of person that if I would say, hey, Mom, I'm going to come up and see you, or you know, what's going on with the family? Oh, don't worry about it. Everything's good. You know, you don't need to come up. You don't need to, you know, go out of your way. And the day that my mom was going up for surgery, I called her and I said, Mom, I'm going to come up and see you. I got off of work. And she said, okay. You know, and it's okay. Two words that I never thought would bring me so much joy in my entire life. My mom wanted me to be around, you know, in her time of need. That was not my family. And that's not because of anything I did. Just because I stopped drinking does not mean that my family wanted me around. It was because I finally let go of all of my ideas, you know, and let a higher power that I didn't understand or believe in come and, you know, help save my life. And it's given me gifts that I've never... It's brought my family back, you know. It's... I've had a job for almost a year. Like, wow, you know. I'm the girl that goes to, like, you know, Jackson Hewitt in April with, like, 15 different W-4s. You know, that's actually not an exaggeration. I had 15 W-4s last year. Yeah, I owed them money because it cost me so much to do my taxes. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, it was pretty crazy. But, my parents got divorced about a year and a half ago, and I'm adopted originally. And this is just little things that, like, God's given me, like, you know what, here, because you're going to appreciate them. You know, given, like, this little gift that God's given me that I never would have appreciated when I was drinking. When my parents got divorced, they had given me some information about my birth parents, my family, and, excuse me, there was, believe it or not, a phone number and an address and a first, middle, and last name on my adoption papers. That doesn't happen. It was a closed case. There should have been none of that information. I called the phone number, and I left a message because what do you really... I probably called this phone number like 100 times and hung up. But I finally left a message, and, you know, hi, my name is so-and-so, and I'm looking for so-and-so. And I have some information that, you know, I think that you might be interested in. And they called me back, and they said, who are you looking for? And I said, I'm looking for Dorothy. And they said, I'm sorry, she passed away 8 years ago. But, like... Yeah, that kind of sucks. But I have a grandmother and a grandfather and an aunt and an uncle and these cousins that, like, I have a family that doesn't know the garbage in my life. You know, like, yes, I get to start fresh with a family that doesn't know all the skeletons in my closet. And it's not that I have to hide them, it's just that they don't have to witness that. You know, like, one of an old sponsor told me that I don't get a patched up old life, I get a brand new life. You know, and I it sounds cute and fuzzy and yeah, that's great. But then I got a brand new life. Like, I got this brand new family, you know, that knew nothing about, you know, anything. And they didn't judge me from actions in the past, or like, they just loved me because I was their family. You know, they loved me because I was their niece or I was their granddaughter. You know, and I was, like, open to receiving, like, unconditional love, and it, like, really creeped me out for a little bit. But it wasn't like I no longer felt like I didn't deserve it. You know, I no longer felt like I didn't deserve to be equal on the level with anybody. You know, I could finally look in the mirror and not feel less than everybody, you know, or better than, you know, like, I'm better than you because I never did it. No. Like, I'm equal, you know, like, I fit in. you know, and it's just, it's not because I stopped drinking. It's absolutely not. It's because I didn't know how to live my life. You know, and the people that got through these rooms before me, they did. You know, and they showed me just, and it wasn't even like, this is what you need to do. Because I don't take direction very well. I'm not good with authority. You know, like I'm probably not the only one. But I don't like being told what to do and what not to do because I'm going to do the exact opposite. But if you do something that I respect or admire, I'll do that. You know, I will absolutely follow in your footsteps because, you know, everybody just wants to be okay. You know, and whether you're an alcoholic or you're a heroin addict or you're stone cold sober, never had a drink in your life, all you want to do is feel okay in life. You know, you just, and everybody has that right. You know, everybody deserves to just feel okay, like they can breathe. You know, and because of people that God has put in my life, I can wake up today and I can breathe. You know, and I can look in the mirror and not absolutely hate myself. You know, and I have friends in my life that no matter what time of day, I can pick up the phone and they'll be there. They'll be there in an instant. You know, and I've never had that before. You know, everybody was like, oh, she wants money, don't pick up the phone. Oh, she's probably drunk and needs to be picked up from, you know, county holding, don't pick up the phone. You know, now it's like, you know what, I wonder if it's a 12-step call, I might want to answer that phone. You know, I wonder if they need help, I wonder if they're okay. You know, make sure we pick up that phone call, you know. And my phone will ring all hours of the night, and I don't care. You know, because people have done it for me. You know, and who am I to take that away from somebody, you know. But it's an amazing day to be sober, and it's really not that difficult. You know, just find somebody that has the shiny eyes and the smile and that warmth that you just don't understand why it annoys you, but you want to be just like them. That's what I did. You know, I followed people that annoyed the heck out of me, and now they're some of the greatest people in my life. You know, and This is a way of life that I don't want to walk away from. You know, and if all I got to do is take a couple simple suggestions and hit my knees and talk to a power greater than myself, it's not a bad deal. You know, if that's going to save me from sleeping on the street or, you know, sitting in jail, you know, or sticking a needle in my arm, that's great. That's all I have to do. You know, it's not that difficult. I always thought it was so difficult. I always had to complicate the hell out of everything. You know? You know, this is the business of saving lives. You know, and mine's absolutely been saved. You know, more times than I probably, you know, deserve. But today I feel that I deserve to be here. You know, and if you have that sinking feeling like you need to shut up and I don't want to hear you talk anymore because I'm miserable, you know, this is where you belong. You know, this is home. You know, but little by little, if you find somebody, you know, that you can't understand why you want to follow them around, ask them how they got here. Ask them what they did. You know, ask them, share your story. You know, because that's what I did. And it a year and a couple weeks later, I'm still sober. And this is something I never thought that it was going to be possible. I'm still an alcoholic. Thank you.